entered the building.
Place to be nation. Welcome to PTB NXT. We are back somehow. We have fought off the Gree-Gree, foreign IP addresses and all of the like to finally come back to you for episode 14. This would be a PTB NXT with my wonderful co-host, Jennifer Smith and Tim Capel. We're still here, guys. We made it through despite some roadblocks.
We did. We're the champions of NXT.
Yeah, toot and all that, but I gotta tell you, I'm a little bit disappointed not to be reviewing Road to Paloma right now.
Same, also.
Not gonna lie.
I could really use that tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's just bag what we're gonna do.
I mean, we still have the option.
No, we have to get to this next fucking takeover because it's been like 800 years.
All right, yeah. Maybe we get through takeover and
there we go.
If things are still in rough shape, you know, network wise, we can get a little creative.
Yeah, we have had to get creative just to keep this going for the time being. But that's how dedicated we are to our hypothetical listeners here, PTB NXT.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, maybe I shouldn't get ahead of myself, but this will be, I guess, in theory, hypothetically, an abbreviated episode because we're only covering two episodes of NXT TV when we normally cover three because we decided to not, there's like a, what is it, like a recap show or something?
Just
we decided
out, not yeah, to do that. Long recap episode that, I mean, we could keep with our three episodes per show cadence, but there's just really no point in doing that last episode before the second takeover event. So I guess this is, you could call it our go home show for NXT Takeover Q to be named later.
Yes, which they still have a bit of work to do from where we left off last time because there's still quite a few moving parts for only having a few weeks off, a couple weeks off before the big show. So I guess we should get to our developmental names, as the tradition calls.
That's right.
All right. All right, Tim, where were our last ones?
Yeah. So we're putting in good work. You know, there's a lot of great psychology in our matches. That's the feedback I've been getting. Our limb work has been on point. But, you know, we just think these characters may not play well for a wider audience. So we're going to have to retire our current identities as Jake, a.k.a. Drake Butters. Jenny, sort of a callback to an earlier character that you had. That this time around, you are Mustachio Floppy Sex of the Floppy Sex family.
Of course.
And I am the very controversial Eugene Ballhair.
Ballhair.
Eugene Ballhair. Yes. Yep.
All right.
Well, fingers crossed for better names this time.
All right. Well, I can tell you because I just started opening up the envelope that was left in my locker room from Triple H, or actually maybe to be our new GM that's giving us the gimmicks now because we have a new GM, as we're going to talk about in just a second. But okay, so I am now going to be, all right, a lot of syllables in this name, just warning you, Flexor Wigglesworth.
Flexor,
which,
okay.
Flexor
Wigglesworth sounds like something from a Minions movie, but.
Wow.
Sure, I'm all right. Too familiar with.
Sort of a, do you think any relation to a Flex Cabana?
Possibly. It seems weird because Flex makes you think of somebody who is obviously in a tip-top physical shape, maybe chiseled out of stone, but then Wigglesworth has connotations of being like a very stringy, not very buff guy, like a somebody who's wiggly and scrawny, like a Harvey Whippleman style physique.
Or like chubby, so like everything sort of like wiggles. Like you need a specific dad t-shirt in order to cover your dad belly.
Like a true classic tee? It's just throwing out there.
A sponsorship opportunity.
Yeah, because they're already blowing up my social media targeted ad. So for a dad bod tee. So yeah, maybe the flex part is like the upper body is, you know, because which customer of the dad bod is that the upper body is sort of, you know, not necessarily, you know, chisel out of stone, but has a little bit of definition. And then as you go south, things get a little more wiggly, if you will. Wigglesworth. So
yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, just depending on how south you go, how wiggly
you may be onto something with that targeted ad theory, because thinking in my own head about the targeted ads that I get on all variety of social media and streaming services, usually it's very aggressive encouragement to shave my nutsack. And as we know, we generated Eugene Ball hair for my name. Right. So subtle reminder there.
Can't wait to see what
my name. We'll continue the theme.
All right. Well, so I think we figured out mine will be, so I guess I will be a dad bod will be the main part of my character, which should go over swimmingly. All right. Next up, Tim. So I think you'll be next. So you are going to be, Mr. Piedmont, Knockcock.
I'm sorry, what?
Piedmont Knockcock?
Piedmont
as in Knockcock.
P as like urine, or P as in...
P like peacock. Oh,
as like in... peacock.
Yeah.
Coincidentally.
Okay. I see.
Totally coincidental.
And what's that last name again?
Knockcock. K-N-O-K-O-C-K. So I believe you'll be a foreign character, most likely.
Wow.
Piedmont Knockcock. Almost like Doc Ock, but Knockcock.
Oh, who knew that was an ingenuity?
What if you had like eight cocks? And that was like
that. That'll put asses in the seats.
I don't think that would meet their standards and practices.
Oh yeah, you're right. It's definitely scrubbed from the network.
Wow, that's I have to hand it to the generator. You never know what it's going to come up with. Piedmont Knockout. No.
Totally random. And I think the best thing you'll have is that I feel like you may get a nice tie-in with the switch over to Peacock, given that coincidentally you have both P and Cock in your name.
Yeah.
And so there will be a lot of motivation to keep you around, you know, for that kind of product placement. Some would call you the billion-dollar man, if anything, because you're so synonymous with the Peacock deal.
Well, they're so desperate for content, they might as well make me their fucking mascot.
Yeah, like you pop up and do like the little interstitials and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Wrestling-wise, I don't fucking know what you would do, but because I don't know how they're going to say your name on commentary.
Oh, you're a jobber, that's it. Sorry about it.
I'm still going to see it in a minute. Local competitor. At least you have a name. Mm-hmm. At least you have a name, which is not
well,
what you can say about all. All right, Jenny, yours will be, this is going to trigger warning on this one, because part of your name, I've been told, upsets people.
Oh, no.
So it's going to be Steve Crotchrot. So a real standard first name.
Let's go with Stevie. Let's call it Stevie.
Stevie Crotchrot.
Because that's got to be feminine. Crotchrot, not as great, I was going to say.
Was she friends with totally... 2002 Nydia?
Come on.
Right, that's my friend Stevie Crotchrot.
And like your finisher is like the stink face, but like like reverse. Like a Bronco Buster kind of thing.
Wow. All right.
Like they pass out like they do in the Mandible Claw, like Mankind's Mandible Claw. They just have to like stop the match.
from the crotch rot smell? Is that
they stop the match?
Yeah, it's like a
like a rest stop gimmick. Only it's not a shoot, so
just look, you got to take what the office gives you, you know.
Look at Triple H.
Some of the greatest. You just they're trying to test you, Jenny, to see like they give you the dumbest shit and see if you're gonna run with it and give it your all, right? Isn't that the thing?
I wonder, you know, if see I'll how dedicated you are. Yeah, I'm probably gonna get that over 100%.
Well, here's the good thing. It's going to change next time we have an episode of ours. Right. So,
come on.
Apologies to anybody who the word crotch. But yeah, I like the Nydia stable idea. Nydia comes back as your manager. Nydia
that's
and.
That's not name. She doesn't really have crotch rot.
She doesn't really have crotch rot.
Why does Nydia sound like Jim Pesci?
It's like my cousin Vinny, but it's Nydia Noble going up north instead of the south.
The two Utes, Nydia and Stevie Crotchrod.
All right.
Oh boy.
Well, we have some very important NXT TV to cover, as like we mentioned at the top, that we're heading into TakeOver, which does not have a subtitle at this point, but we'll see how that shakes out. So we'll start with the August 28, 2014 episode of NXT, and we start off with our favorite tag team, the ever-dominant Ascension. And they will be coming out to face their favorite opponents. Actually, if there's any way they could somehow lower the level of talent that they're facing, they have managed to do it. Because these two local talents, I searched online. I tried to figure out who these two gentlemen were, and I could not. All I could find was local talents. So they're going to be facing two local unnamed talents.
I feel really redeemed by just using this as... It literally in my big spreadsheet of star ratings, anytime I don't catch the name of an Ascension
opponent.
Yes, opponent, thank you. I just put local competitors, and here we didn't even get any help from the commentators.
Yep.
Yeah, and even on the network, they will sometimes tell you, like in the little match description thing, who it is and Nothing.
You think
no
this
one knows
is,
who people are.
You think this is some preemptive editing on their part? Like, was somebody untoward?
Oh. Which of these guys committed a sex crime?
Yeah, I mean, like...
Yeah. Both of them, since...
Probably.
Maybe, I don't know.
It's possible.
They cast aspersions on these talented looking competitors, but...
On these unnamed gentlemen. I don't know, but they get their asses kicked like people do normally when they face Ascension, which is what this is. Alex Riley compares the Ascension to the Shield at one point, which seems optimistic to compare them to the Shield, but they make quick work of our local talents here. Like, not they didn't mess around with them very much. I would say this match lasted all of like 45 seconds. I went a half a star on this one because I could not even give it my standard one-star squash rating because there just wasn't enough there. And I feel like you're not even naming the individuals they're facing. So that's not worth a star to me.
I mean, thoughts? It's a dud. I mean, all their fucking matches are a dud and I'm done rating them.
Yeah, you're kind of in that camp, and I don't really blame you. And similar to you, Jake, your logic of you have your standard squash match rating, and mine is more like a half a star, and I just didn't think it was worth even a half a star, so I went a quarter star. So we
of the dud. Do the duds.
Oh, I came close, but I was like, it existed. It's something. But yeah, we've gone from dud to quarter to half star. So, wow. This one sure impressed, huh?
They pimped the mobile game during this very important match.
Yes. Yeah, true.
They try to put the whole entire tag team tournament over like it's been shit, but it's been trash, and we all know it's been trash for the most part. And all of this is stupid. Plus, they try to talk at the end, and it's nonsense.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear them talk.
That's true. So let's go into that. So they grab the mic and say the next number one contenders will just be victims, and it will be no different than everybody else that has faced them, and it will be annihilation.
There was like 85 syllables.
In yeah, it was not good. It just did not work. What are you trying to do?
No.
I wasn't sure if it was Connor or Victor. I didn't think of his name. But yeah, I wasn't feeling the promo too much, especially the annihilation. It was like definitely trying to come up with something, but it just did not land at all.
They definitely got the what treatment from the crowd too.
Well, this crowd is a bunch of assholes. I'll just
yeah, they kind of are. Yeah, it starts off right from the get go. Mm-hmm. But I mean, in a way, I can't blame them for that one because it was such a stilted promo that is designed for that sort of mockery.
Agree.
Yeah, it's weird with the Ascension because I feel like this is one of the easiest ways to build up guys. If you just want to do like, hey, look, they're dominant, they destroy guys, right. But they never do a very good job. Mm-hmm. So then they just come off as like some punks that just always pick on weaker competition, and it makes them look sucky.
And even the tag tournament, I feel like barely did anything to elevate anybody except maybe Kalisto Sin Cara. The vaudevillains a little bit, but like it looked like a farce. Like it looked like nonsense to me. Like I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they whiffed on the tag tournament a little bit.
Yeah, it was not good.
I'm really hoping that at TakeOver we get something to push the tag division in some kind of new direction or something, because
like
it's
taking
real.
The belts off of these fuckers.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's actually establishing teams and just doing something with it, because it's definitely, I would say, one of the lowlights of these shows, just knowing the talent that they have and that they could be doing much better than what they're doing.
Agree.
You know, I remember people being really high on the Ascension at the time here in 2014. And personally, like, I didn't really see it. I thought they were okay, but like, I guess I appreciated what they were going for, but I just didn't think they were really pulling it off. But there were people who were super, super into them and like, oh, just wait until they hit the main roster. I'm like, these guys, really? And this has just been, again, somewhat validating to me, because I'm like, I didn't think they were all that at the time. And suffice to say, over the course of this podcast, they have failed to impress just across the board, all three of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've said nothing new here, but like, man, looking back, it's been a rough slog just trying to follow this team. It's like, it's so redundant, and that would be fine for maybe somebody like a Sid who just has that natural charisma, and even going out there doing the same thing every single week, it pops you. But they're just lacking that. I don't know what it is, but it's not there.
Yes. So, all right. So we continue. I only point this out because they're kind of sadly funny, but they have these network ads telling us about how great the network is and how you can get every pay-per-view and watch every Nitro and all this stuff, which is kind of kind of sadly ironic given the current situation with the network. And so that
these,
I don't know what's like the,
these ads like made the main roster angry.
Yes. Yes,
it was like whatever the opposite of popping is. It was like I popped in like a negative way. Like, look at this. It's like, you lucky bastards in 2014.
I know. Guys.
Anyway,
I just turned it off, honestly.
So we continue on and we get our the big announcement of our new GM that was hyped last time we spoke about this. And we find out that the new GM is going to be William Regal, PTB NXT favorite William Regal, which I'm sure, like, you guys are probably with me. We're going to miss Regal on commentary because he brought so much to commentary. He will be sorely missed.
Yes.
But I'm sure he'll do a good job at this, but I don't know if he's, I kind of almost wish he would have stayed on commentary, because kind of anybody can do the GM role and it doesn't really matter that much. I don't know, you guys feel.
Yeah, the GM has been such a non-entity on these shows, and that's been refreshing to me, because I think, like a lot of us, I've been really sick of the just heel owner character. It's just very played out, and I'm glad that they haven't gone that route in NXT. So sure, have an authority figure, that's fine, but like, they don't have to be a character. They don't have to be a participant in the storylines. And as you said, Jake, that could just be anybody.
Do we think that Regal was just like, get me off this fucking lame-ass commentary. I want to do something other than this.
Then might have
possible.
Yeah, I am sad because as far as commentary goes, he's pretty much it right now in mm-hmm. NXT, like as far as anything that we really like. So we're sort of fucked when it comes to commentary now.
I know. I think we're now in a world where Tom Phillips is our favorite commentator. Like, fine, but what does that tell you?
Yeah, like it's 5 out of 10 Tom Phillips.
Yeah, right.
Good old solid Tom Phillips. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he was like, look, I don't really want to have that big of an on-screen role. If y'all can keep me around in some form. He probably just wanted to like train guys, and I would think so. I think he probably asked for it, kind of. I mean, unless they're idiots and we're like, oh, no, you're not good at commentary. Let's take you off and leave all these other schmucks. Which, who knows? Maybe they did. But he says, as his first act, he says he's going to announce the main event at TakeOver. He brings out the champ, Neville, who basically says he's ready for whoever's next, which gets the crowd to a Goldberg chant, of course. I did like a... I know, it's like, come on. Regal is kind of serious. I enjoyed his seriousness throughout all this, that he carried himself with a lot of weight, which I thought was cool, without kind of being overbearing, which was good. Then we get interrupted by Tyson, and so Neville kind of assumes that, well, Tyson actually assumes that it's going to be him that's going to be number one contender, and he tells us that he will leave with the title at TakeOver. But then he is interrupted by Tyler Breeze, who then comes out and says that this Uggo, Tyson, doesn't deserve a shot. It should be him. And that his wife is more deserving of a shot. So a nice day from Tyler there. Mm-hmm. Then Sammy interrupts. He comes out and says that he is the most deserving, basically because he is the backbone of NXT, so on and so forth. And Neville says that he has an opinion on all this. He says he wants Tyson and Breeze and Sammy. He wants to face all of them in one match in a fatal four-way. And Regal ends up saying that that wasn't the plan he had, but he basically kind of begrudgingly agrees to this, which sets up our main event for TakeOver, guys.
I think that this is the most generic and boring way that you could ever set up a four-way. I mean, I feel like it all makes sense story-wise. Like, they all have fought each other. You know, they all have beefs with each other for different reasons. So I see that. But it's like, Regal just lets it happen. Like, he has no authority. He's not an authority figure. He's Neville's like, I want to fight all y'all. And he's like, all right, we'll do that. And, you know, there's no drama. There's no nothing like, there's no heat here. There's no hate, really. I love Neville, but he's so, like, cool. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he's just, like, whatever. You know, he's just, like, awesome about everything. But it also takes away some of his, I don't want to say fire, but, like, it just, this all seems quite blah in the forming of the four-way. I don't even want a fucking four-way on this. I feel like Tyler should be the number one contender, but I don't want to fuck with Tyson anymore. I'm done with him. And Sammy, I think, could probably do something else, but I don't know.
Yeah. What did you think, Tim? It's a very telegraphed way to get here. Yeah. And like, yeah, it comes off pretty generic. I would agree. There's just more creative ways to get to this point if you do want to do a fatal four-way, which is fine in theory, but maybe give us some more twists and turns along the way. I don't know. Not to get all like Russo about it, but right. It's just, there's more fun ways you could go about it than, oh, now
this is also civilized, right? They all just,
yeah,
kind of file out one by one. I mean, you already see it happening as it's happening. You're like, okay, whatever, let's all just get to it. Like, nobody fights each other. Nobody ties up with each other. Nobody does anything, you know? Yeah.
It's like, oh, I wonder who's going to come out next. It's just so paint by numbers. Yeah. So, yeah, and I sort of agree that it's just not been the hottest. These aren't the hottest mix of characters, and it's not the hottest feud on the planet. This hadn't been setting the world on fire. Tyson with his fax gimmick is so, like, it just seems like he would be one of those, fact, Neville's going to lose the title. Fact, I should be the number one contender. Fact, I'm going to be the next champ. And all he really does is go, just make a very blasé banal observation and then go, fact. And you're like waiting for the next fact that he's going to spit, and he never does. Like, it's, I don't know, it's pretty fitting of his character. Like, just so lame.
Yeah, I agree. It's not the most exciting. Like Jenny said, they're all intertwined, but not in the most, like, cohesive way that would suggest that this, like, we need to go this way. Like, normally what you have is, like, the guys are all kind of involved, and they have matches, and other guys interfere, so you're kind of, it's usually like, well, we have no choice but to put y'all together, because y'all are just going to keep fucking each other over until, you know, so we just have to do it. And it's very weird. And, like, Alex Riley calls Neville out for it. He says he's stupid for wanting this, asking for this, because he's like, you can lose your title. I know they're trying to put him over as, like, a fighting champion that's going to take this on. But it's kind of like, you know, you don't have to get pinned. Like, you don't have to be involved with it. So it's a stupid move. So, yeah, I agree. And it's not, I'm kind of excited because there's a lot of talent in the match. But as far as, like, storyline wise, it kind of seems like they're like 2 weeks from the, you know, the show's coming up and they have to figure something out. So, like, this will be entertaining. Throw it together. But it's not the most compelling way to get there. So,
and I'm, like, kind of scared that Tyson's going to win it, like, at this point.
Oh, God.
I don't want that. No, thank you.
Ooh, I haven't thought about it. I'm trying to keep the thought out of my
head. I thought about looking it up, but I was like, don't do that.
Hopefully that's not a fact. Let's hope. But regardless, and this is a huge segment too. Like, this took up a lot of time. We usually don't get long drawn out segments like this. So, yeah, not the greatest in the world. All right, so we keep going. We get a new interviewer. I did not catch her name here.
Me either.
Yeah. A lot of people not getting names on this show. The local talents, this new interviewer, nobody has a name. But she speaks with Regal about what just happened, and he says in order to warm up for this, he's going to make a tag match, basically putting the heels that are in the Fatal 4-Way in the faces on tag teams, and they're going to have them go against each other. So kind of in line with what we just said, it's okay, but it's not, it's just kind of paint by numbers. Like, hey, throw them all in a tag match, which is something they've always done.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not been so, I don't know, like, so straightforward about it, where it's like, all right, we just put him in this Fatal 4-Way 5 seconds ago. Now we're going to all put him in attack. They at least try to put, like, a veil over it sometimes as to, you know, hide it from us, like, they're thinking with this. So kind of goes hand in hand with making the Fatal 4-Way. It just seems very kind of thrown together.
I can just, the way you describe it, it's like, Regal should have been like, well, young lady, we're just going to take the good guys and put them against the bad guys in our main event tonight.
That's basically it.
Basically, yeah.
Because Breeze and Breeze and Tyson versus Sammy and Neville. So we'll see that later. But next up, we have a match which seems like a decently important match just thrown out here. It's going to be Sasha versus Bayley. I wasn't sure, and I'm never sure if I'm, like, not listening other times, but Sasha definitely had her, like, her song here. I don't know if I'd heard it up to this point. Has she had her
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I feel like this is the first time I heard it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was going crazy.
I think you're right.
I don't super have an ear for stuff like that yet. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's probably one of those things that's going to take me a long while. But I do think that was the first time we had heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have this thing where it's like, I don't know if it's the first time or the first time I noticed, which is very possible. It's been on there for like 14 episodes.
Yeah, I mean, we could very well have been hearing it, and we probably talked about it in our last episode, and we've just forgotten.
Well, it's been an eternity. Yeah. But anyway, so she's got her song now. We get a very aggressive start from her. She gets a nice kick in the corner on Bayley, which I thought was pretty good. She still does a little bit of her kind of thrashing offense, but as we said, she's moving more and more away from it. But then, so it's kind of like this whole first part of the match is Sasha kind of working over Bayley, and then Bayley gets a forearm, then she hits the Bayley to belly out of nowhere, and then wins it. Very strange match to me. It was extremely fast, like I would say like 3 minutes or less. Like it really wasn't a whole lot going on to this one. And it was pretty much just Sasha beating her up until she hits the belly to belly. But I also thought it was kind of odd for Sasha, who, like I just mentioned, so she has a song now, they're trying to establish her, and she kind of just gets like beaten with two moves essentially in this match. So I want a star and a quarter on it just because there really wasn't enough time to really build a lot. But I did like some of the stuff that Sasha showed in this, and Bayley's selling is always pretty decent. I don't know.
I only went 3/4 of a star. Like, I did like with some more time, it could have maybe done a little bit better, but I don't know. I'm still like Sasha with her offense. It feels like she's regressed a little because I thought she was getting past, as you said, this kind of thrashy, very like standard early 2000s women's divas match offense crap. And she's just sort of falling back on it here. And it's a shame to see that when she does control so much of this match. I mean, make of that what you will. Like you said, it's like a sub 3 minute match, but I sort of liked Bayley getting the flash pin out of nowhere, hits her finish, and that, you know, sometimes that's how it goes. And it sort of feels like Sasha just slipped on a banana peel, and I guess I'm okay with that, but why feed Bayley Sasha? Like, I understand you want to spotlight her.
Well, there's no one else. I mean, who else are you going to do? Becky?
I don't know.
I mean, didn't we just see them?
Yeah,
did we just see them? I don't know if we did or not.
Well, we kind of had the same complaint, right?
Right, just, yeah. There's no more women right now.
Yeah, no, oh, God. So, Bayley had that awful match with Eva Marie.
No, Eva Marie. That's right.
Which I gave negative stars.
Yeah, never negative.
So I guess it's better than seeing that again.
This feels like Bayley needs a win going into TakeOver versus Charlotte, and Sasha's the only one there.
Sasha's got nothing going on. We can just hit reset on Sasha after this.
Yeah. Which is good because I mean I'm just not much of a Sasha fan anyway, but I didn't see much greatness here at all. I mean, it's a 1-star match for me. The commentary, sans Renee for some reason, because there's women in the match. I just figured Renee would probably be talking in this one, but it's somehow even worse without her. But
who you think is awful usually?
Yeah, usually.
Whether it's a women's match or anything, with their own commentary,
pretty much. But we do get to see her in a terrible post-match segment, Jake.
Yeah, so Renee interviews Bayley in the ring about her title shot at TakeOver. Bayley says that she is prepared, and she has hung in there just like the poster with the cat hanging on the clothesline that says, hang in there, and she will turn this into a new reality. So she gives a very aw shucks kind of promo going in. So do we want to talk about this before the next part? What do we think of aw shucks Bayley promo?
Not for me, fam, at
I mean, it's her character, so it's like whatever. At least she isn't. It doesn't make me uncomfortable in the way that some of those like very early Bayley promos did, where she almost seemed developmentally.
I was gonna say about it. I think she's moved past that at least for sure.
And she just seems like a very like innocent sort of. Like
she's too nice like Charlotte said.
Yeah, which I think she's pulling it off okay for that character, but it's just you know, your mileage may vary with that. Yeah. The whole concept of that character.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she's doing good. It's just that I don't care about it.
It's a character for like for little girls, which girls. You know what? Great.
Yeah.
Like have different characters be role models for different demographics.
Charlotte can be my role model, and then sure. They can have Bailey.
There you go.
Because she walks out and basically pisses in Bailey's cornflakes. Yes. She chastises her for crying, says Bailey's too nice, she needs to just give it up. The crowd keeps kind of heckling Charlotte, or I don't even know, but she definitely kept telling them to shut up, like, repeatedly. Like,
which was great.
Charlotte was, like, all over the crowd. She was like, shut up. No, seriously, shut up. Which was, yeah, that was good. Bailey steps up to her and says that she will win, and they kind of play it up. And this is what I mean. If for what the character is, I think she's doing a good job of it. Like, here, she does a good job of kind of being... Like, she steps up to her, and she seems kind of nervous, but she still does it. So, mm-hmm. I think she's executing it. Okay, says she's going to win, and Charlotte tells her to stick to hugs. Bailey goes to shake her hand, and Charlotte walks out, which is Bailey's big thing here. She just wants Charlotte to shake her hand and show that she respects her and feels that she is a worthy competitor, basically. And so, the thing, it's definitely a step up from the BFS, which I know is an extremely low bar, because... It's very heavy-handed, like heel face sort of thing, but I think it works okay because they both are executing their character. Like, they have each have a clear character, even if they each of them are maybe a little one note. I feel like they're both executing it well, and I kind of like their chemistry together, if that makes any sense. So I thought it was simple, but overall fairly effective for me. It at least was something like some kind of personal issue that they're building between them, or some kind of story, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely better when Charlotte comes out. I mean, because Charlotte, she does her shit awesome. And she gives Bailey a lot, I think. And I think kind of steadies her in that promo because she seemed very nervous. And I know that's like the character, but like I feel like a lot of that was like truthfully like her feeling very nervous because we haven't really heard her talk that much. Mm-hmm. And that crowd, like we said, fucking assholes. But I thought Charlotte was really good in this. And like you said, it is a good, we'll call it a half step up from best friend stuff. But more entertaining anyway.
Something I took note of in this, and it's one of those, like, they always say it's the little things that make somebody a great performer, right? And... it's hard to come up with examples of that unless you're really seeing it right in front of you. And it's when Charlotte is getting on the crowd. She's telling him to shut up, which is a very kind of a, I don't know, cheap heat thing to do for a heel. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of thinking whatever about it. But then when Bailey starts to respond to her, Charlotte again yells at the crowd, "Are you going to let Bailey talk?"
That was really good.
And the reason I like that so much is because, number one, it was different from just doing the generic heel laying into the crowd thing. Mm-hmm. Number two, it kind of gave Bailey a chance to like kind of collect herself if she was feeling like either legit or just worked nerves. I don't know what to call it. But it gave her an opportunity to really collect herself. Right.
Yeah.
And number three, it Charlotte in saying that was still like making it all about herself, which is a very, like, she's the one who's commanding the attention. Right. Even though she's like semi, trying to put Bailey over. Mm-hmm. So I just sort of liked that. It just checked a lot of cool boxes there for me.
Yeah, and I like that she's, you kind of get a sense that Charlotte wants her to not, like, it bothers her that Bailey's the way, and, like, part of her really does want Bailey to change and not act like such a dork, which is, yeah, so, like, I think there's enough going on there. I was engaged with it. Like, it kept my interest better than a lot of the kind of, I guess, like, the feuds or character moments that we get on here thus far. Yeah.
Like, she's almost playing up how big of an asshole she's being just to get... something out of Bailey that she wants. Like, she wants to see more of a competitive fire.
Which is what a good heel does.
Which is what a good heel does, yeah. Something that because she's looking at this Bailey and thinking, if that's who you really are, then I'm just going to squash you like a bug.
Exactly. So it's real It's real smart on Charlotte's part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very much. So next, I'll just mention this real quick because it was such a WWE thing to do. But like they show this DVD of just like the top 50 WCW moments, and they're just like burying the shit out of WCW. Like, look how stupid WCW was. Look at this dumb shit. Like the Shockmaster. What a bunch of losers. Like
that's basically whatever. Like the entire commercial. That video got me hyped. So opposite effect.
It was just so like shitting on WCW, well, like classic WWE burying them.
I feel like we're getting like this almost world tour of the network experience here. First, we get an ad for you can watch like every Nitro ever, and now it's like, hey, invest in physical media, folks. Don't throw those DVDs away.
If anybody has a DVD of Uncensored 95, please send it to me.
The DVD?
A VHS? I don't know.
Turner Classic Video released.
Do you know what that?
Yeah.
Is there only the King? They better have King of the Road uncut. No Turner edits.
That's what I want.
It's probably on this DVD, honestly.
What if Peacock puts uncut King of the Road match on?
The uncut King of the Road, where you see the blood and everything.
Yeah.
That was supposed. What if it's like the Disney Plus service where you watch some of their movies and you've got another tab for like DVD extras?
Yeah.
You get 12 hours of extras with Uncensored 95.
I will take back everything I said about the cock if they do that.
Yep.
All right. All right, so carrying on, next up we have a match between Bull, who's been getting a little bit of push lately, versus Angelo Dawkins. Commentary is hyping up the big Bull Mojo collision that's upcoming at TakeOver, based on their little conflict that they have going on. Albert tells us that Bull is always in the gym, which is, they're talking about how, but they spent a great deal of this match talking about how he's always in the gym, he's working on his diet, which, look, no judgment from me, Bull, but I'm not sure if that's totally true. He does not look like a gym rat, which is his thing. I don't know why you would, like, I don't know why you even play that up. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like they just talk sometimes and they realize what they're saying. Like, wait, why are we talking about Bull?
Works out with Triple H every night.
Yeah, and they're trying to, like, cover themselves because they realize how stupid it sounds to say Bull Dempsey's, like, in the gym, like, work on his diet, which is not, it's not even his character. He shouldn't want to do that. He should be, like, a dude who's like, no, I just drink whiskey and, like, beef and beat motherfuckers up, which is his character. So why say he's
really
like
a bad? They're just really bad. That's the only explanation. Yeah. They have no idea what they're.
They also
doing.
Say that he. They also say he grew up watching Murdoch, and I was like, so I looked up. He was born in 1988. So I guess he was getting the VHS tapes or something because God. You know, I feel like Dick Murdoch's career was kind of
frog went down.
Yeah, in 88. So
Bull's again. Job.
They are just say.
Well, he could have been watching, too. You know, VHS tapes.
Mm. Yeah. Well.
As a young man.
I guess so. Hopefully, you still got that on physical media.
Hit us up, Bull. But basically, the match is Bull just clobbering the shit out of Angelo Dawkins. So we should mention, like, he comes out with kind of a. He gets some kind of character. Like, he has a backpack on and like a flowy shirt and stuff. And some music, any kind of
backpack, huh?
Well, what kind of character is he, though? A nerd?
Yeah, no clue. But he
it's supposed to be some kind of like club kid type of character.
I don't get it.
Not really sure where they were going with this, but he it's weird because they did make a point to focus on him a little bit, not treat him like a complete jobber, but then he just gets destroyed by Bull, just beating his ass and winning. So I want to star on it. I kind of don't mind watching Bull beat guys up. He's pretty fun to watch squash people.
Yeah. So I went, looks like a half a star on this one. I kind of regarded it as just a squash because Angelo's offense really just consisted of a few desperation punches. But Bull just like powered him into that, bulldozed. Like, it seemed like he almost lost him at one point. but managed to get it together and hit his move. What's it called? The bulldozer?
Yes.
Which it looked better Dawkins taking it than some other guys. Like that's a move. It sort of depends on your opponent, I feel like, how well it's going to look. So, I don't know. Pretty impressive display for Bull. I don't know what they're going for with Dawkins either. He's sort of a 2014 Sonny Kiss, I feel like, if I'm allowed to make an AEW reference.
Well, I mean, I feel like by the end, Bull was already sort of gassed. I mean, I don't know, like in a squash match, like
he's exhausted from that workout he did before. He was exhausted.
Triple H, it's like the paces.
It's like Bull's in the gym and like he gets blown up in a 3-minute squash match and can't even barely get his finisher done. I mean,
so what are you thinking, Dud?
No, I gave it a star just because I like Bull.
Oh, okay.
And I was being a cunt when I was thinking about this match, so.
Apparently not as much as me. I only gave it a half.
Bull likes his elbow drops, and he kind of got into a little bit of a rut. I think he kind of got a little bit lost, maybe forgot any other moves to do because he hit about 4 of them in that 3-minute stretch. But, hey, I like you, great value, Matt Sousa. I give you 1 star.
Oh, my God. Well, hey, his diet consists of gasoline and Jack Daniels, so he was
like he a was real maybe, man.
Yeah, not feeling it so much in this match.
Nah, he according to them, he's on a very strict
the diet.
Complex carbs, protein. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you can see in his physique. All right, next up we have the Legionnaires come out and they speak about their air versus air match that will be coming up. Marcus Louis calls Enzo a slob and then basically says, "May I'm a Pele Enzo me." And that was pretty much the promo. The Legionnaires calling out Enzo and Cash for their big air versus air match. As
Pubic hair versus pubic hair.
Yeah.
I'm so hyped for that match.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Oh, don't worry. It's not the last we'll see of the build to the air versus.
By the way, I just wrote this down as the Legionnaires have a weird exchange backstage.
I wrote Legionnaires interview nonsense.
You didn't hear me? I'm a Pele Enzo me.
Sure didn't.
I think that's a direct quote.
Very good.
All right. We keep going and we get a, so we're to our main event tag match. We have Tyler
Breeze. Well, not yet. We get a Leprechaun reboot ad before that.
Oh, sorry. See, you cover that, Tim, because that, I was so focused on the, that epic Legionnaires segment that it must
be. Well, you know, I'm pissed to tell you the truth, because after all of my efforts on our last episode to educate the world, which I know our hypothetical fans appreciated, learning about the great Leprechaun cinematic universe, which you could at the time watch on Lecoq. None of them today. They've already taken them all off. So you get past St. Patrick's Day month, and it's just like, can't afford these. You know, it's, we pay $1 billion for the fucking network, but we can't keep a few Leprechaun movies around. God. This one, by the way, was not among the ones you could watch anyway. But that's not the point.
Doesn't matter.
All we asked for is some Leprechaun movies.
Jesus.
Be so angry. Just such a microaggression.
Agreed. But yeah, so we go to our main event tag with Tyson Kidd and Tyler Breeze versus Sammy and Neville, and definitely going in with the very tropey. I don't know if these guys are going to get along. I don't know if they're going to be able to function.
Oh boy!
I don't know if because they're all going to be meeting at the pay per view, going for the title. I don't know if they're going to coexist. But anyway, you get a strong start from the faces. They control Breeze, including Neville hitting that sick corkscrew that he always hits.
Oh.
He looks like a badass as usual. Tyson then gets the advantage, and Breeze actually hits a sick kick, which is one of his signature moves, like on the apron. He hits Neville like square in the head with a nice kick, which was good. They continue to work over Neville until Sammy gets the hot tag. He gets a nice crossbody on both of the heels, and he actually hits a Michinoku driver, which is awesome for a nice little near fall there. Neville's back in now. He hits a standing shooting star press. But Breeze is able to avoid the red arrow. And Sammy then comes in and accidentally hits Neville with the Huluva kick, which Breeze and Tyson are unable to take advantage because they're arguing. Tyson then tosses Sammy after a blue thunderbomb on Breeze, so kind of stops him from getting the cover there. Tyson then is able to cover Neville for the win because he is still knocked silly from the Huluva kick. So good action here. It kind of went what would you expect with the, all the, miscommunications and that sort of thing happening to build tension for the main event. So as far as like building the story, it was kind of standard, like we said earlier. But as far as the action of the match, I went 3 stars on it because that was a pretty fun tag match. And I don't know. There's just a lot of good guys in here. Like Sammy and Neville looked awesome as they normally do. And I thought Tyson and Breeze looked pretty good in it as well. So
like after the most generic setup ever, then we get the most generic tag match ever with some exceptions, the driver and then the corkscrew and all that shit that looks awesome, like you said. But like the crowd sucks. And Tyson gets the fucking pin? What are we doing? I was already afraid of Tyson winning a takeover. This is not boding well for that. I don't want to see him pin Neville. What the fuck, man?
Well, it sounds like you're really hyped for takeover, Jenny. Sounds like you can't wait to watch it.
I'm having issues. I gave this match 2.5 stars. What did you give it, Tim?
Oh, God. I gave it 3.25.
Damn.
Stars, which I might revise that to 3. I don't know. Tyson does a moss covered 3-handled family credenza at one point. So I tacked on a 1/4 star for that. Maybe
hashtag moves.
See, it made me think about 2001 Saturn. So I
my boo, 2000.
I got in my feelings, I think, and was overly generous towards the match. No, I don't know. I enjoyed this. It had some good little spots in it, and I like how it, predictable though it was, I like how chaotic it got towards the end when things really broke down, and it put some heat on Tyson going into the takeover. Makes me feel more confident he will not win since he got some shine here. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's like his moment. Fingers crossed. You know, we don't need to see Neville lose that belt. Come on.
He's especially not to this motherfucker.
He's the man. So, I don't know. It got me excited for that match. I mean, I know we aren't thrilled at the match type, this Fatal 4-Way. I think if nothing else, though, it will produce a pretty good match. So nice and symmetrical. 4 guys in there who can all go in the ring. I'm into it.
Yeah. And I should mention that Sammy hits the Huluva kick on Tyson as he's gloating about the win. And we actually end with Sammy staring at the title to close the show. So kind of, despite Tyson winning, kind of Sammy gets the moment at the end. I'm kind of more in the boat with Tim. I feel like it's more, I'm thinking Tyson's probably not going to win. Like, this is a sign of like, yeah, he's got the upper hand now because he's probably not going to win going into the show. But I have no idea. Who knows? Because they seem to really be enamored with Tyson Kidd for some
reason. That's what I'm saying. Like, in the NXT, like, in my mind, I agree with you guys. Like, that makes sense to me. But, like, I'm like, oh, no. Like, in the NXT world, this does not look good.
You're used to being really victimized by the main roster booking, I know.
I guess so.
I understand it.
Jenny's putting a heavy emphasis on the fatal part of the Fatal 4-Way.
Yes.
And that she wants multiple of the combatants to maybe be killed in the match.
At least one. That's all I ask.
Okay.
But that wraps us up for this episode. So I thought this was a, I thought the main event was good. We got at least some build to take over, like some focus now. I thought the Charlotte and Bayley interaction was at least interesting, even though besides the main event, we didn't really get anything even that I would consider a real match in ring. But I think on these shows, if you can get like a 3-star main event, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And if you get anything else but that, that's okay. So I went 5 out of 10 since it's we got a good match and some decent build, which is enough for like an average show on these.
Yeah, I'll say 5 out of 10, somewhat reluctantly. I'm leaning more.
4 out of 10, the correct, yeah. The correct for the show.
Well, we've got another show to come. So.
True, you're right.
In a vacuum, it's probably like a 4 out of 10, I guess. But
yep.
I don't know. I'm just thinking ahead a little bit here. Spoilers.
There are numbers lower than 4. I'm just
there
saying.
Are. There are. I hesitate to. What did I give that one really dreadful with the negative star match? That
I think
show.
It was 2?
Did
three?
I give it a 2? So.
Oh man, that was so bad. So bad. I think Jenny might be coining a new term. Instead of main roster anger, it's going to be like developmental angry.
Developmental angry.
Developmental Tyson Kidd angry.
Eva Marie angry.
I honestly do think it like it completely coincides with Tyson Kidd coming in. I think
it
that's
does.
Like the
it does.
That's like the turning point. He's but yeah.
I just hate him.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan either, to be honest with you. So,
and Natty's gone. Like, you know, we had talked endlessly about Natty, and then finally he shook her off, right? Mm-hmm. No Natty to be found ringside anymore. So I guess he's done with that, you know? Like, I used my wife to get on this show, so that's fine.
You know, it's really funny. If it was 2001 right now, and we were like edgelordy 17-year-old wrestling fans who... Mm. You know, worshipped at the altar of work rate, we'd be bitching about how Tyson Kidd wasn't getting his due. I guarantee you we would.
Does anybody bitch about that at all?
Not as an adult, no.
Okay.
I can't imagine. I mean, maybe there's somebody out there. If you are, tell us we're wrong. Yeah.
I need to know.
But, like, I just feel like that's one of those adjustments that you make as a wrestling fan over time. Maybe it's the natural course of things. I don't know. When you've lived through a certain era, when a particular style, a particular wrestler was the be all end all, and you kind of get over it. I don't know. I don't want to get on a whole thing.
I feel like you're talking about The Rock here, but I mean, I could be wrong.
I don't know where to go with it. I'm not touching that one.
I know.
That is a you can only speak for yourself there. I would never dare to try to speak for you with respect to your Rock issues.
Yeah, moving on.
Yep.
But on that, Jenny, would you like to speak on the wonderful things we have going on in the various feeds and things over here at Place to Be Nation?
On feeds various and things.
Feeds and things. Feeds and things that we have here at Place to Be Nation.
All right. So right now,
have sites, we have networks, right?
Yeah, we have
experiences, the whole...
positions. I mean, it's everything. So right now on the Place of a Nation Wrestling Network, you can hear the newest Place to Be podcast, episode number 574. They Scott and Justin and Dave Hall closed out the year of 1991 with a house show from Madison Square Garden. So listen to that one. Senior video, episode number 13 covers WrestleFest number 92. WrestleFest season 92.
Season 92, yes.
Yes. And also Pro Wrestling Love number 19 covers the 2000s Japan part 4. So another great listen there. On the Pop Experience right now, Tim, you're on a lot of shows over there. What are you on the Pop Experience?
Well, I guess I'm officially a cast member. We're still working on contracts, still in heavy negotiations, but I am continuing to appear weekly on Pop Goes to the Couch, where we are weekly reviewing Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Of course, all the great Marvel cinematic televisual content gets talked about over there on the Place Be Nation Pop Experience. So if you are watching that show, if you're interested in the Marvel TV product, do give that a listen. Had kind of a maybe controversial episode just in terms of where we kind of came down on this most recent episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, halfway through that series now, just to serve as a teaser. Now, we also had a review of Zack Snyder's Justice League. That's right. The 4 hours and some change extravaganza on HBO Max. Talked through that with Andy and the gang as well over there on Place Be Nation Pop, which, Jenny, you just watched the film yourself, didn't you?
I just finally finished the Snyder Cut, so that is on my list of things to listen to get you guys' takes on that, and I have lots of thoughts. I hadn't really been able to talk about it with anybody yet,
right.
Excited to hear what you guys thought. Also in that feed, there's the NBA team is back with an episode, and then also there's a new Making Mount Rushmore. They did comedy cartoon series and action cartoon series. That was Ray Carcillo, Ben Locke, and Steve Riddle with Andy to talk about their Mount Rushmores. And then also there was a new PTB and Trivia Night covering the 90s. So that was Matt Souza, Greg Diener, and Mike Valente battled it out over 90s trivia. I haven't listened to that either, but that one is also on my list. I will talk to you more about the Jenny position at the end of the show and tell you what I'm doing over there. But in the meantime, you can go to TeePublic and search PTBW, and you will find cool wrestling t-shirts and mugs and stickers and all kinds of fun stuff that have logos from all the cool shows here, including PTB NXT. So buy some stuff. That would be awesome. That's about it. Jacob.
Perfect. Yeah, get your PTB NXT shirts, coffee mugs, pins, whatever you want. Anyway, all right.
VHS so tapes. VHS tapes, awesome.
Yeah.
For all your physical media. Anyway.
It's like Sam Goody. All right, so we continue on to our September 4th, 2014 episode of NXT, and we open with Alexa Bliss versus Charlotte in our first match. Renee is Jenny's favorite. Renee is back on commentary, and she comes out the gate hot, calling Alexa a sexy Smurf, which seems to baffle the rest of the commentary team. They're not really sure how to react to this.
Yeah,
probably one because. It's a stupid comment, and also I feel like they don't want to be like offensive or something, or
like I want to fuck that sexy Smurf or some shit.
Yeah, so they're mostly befuddled. But anyway, the match itself is, I wouldn't call it a complete squash because Alexa got a few moments to shine. It's very similar to the Angela Dawkins match we just talked about, where Alexa gets a few moments of shine, but it's kind of just Charlotte picking her apart and just kind of destroying her. I thought Alexa looked okay. She still is not anything super impressive or anything that stands out to me, but Charlotte looked really great in this match. I went standard star on this one because I thought Charlotte brought the goods for a semi-competitive squash match.
I went ahead and gave it a star also. I kind of shrugged and gave it a star just because there wasn't a whole lot here. Alexa's a little bit disjointed in her mainly defense, which is what she was on for much of this match, but for the most part seemed to be keeping up with Charlotte. So credit to her there. She does eat a nasty tilt-a-whirl gut buster at one point. And, you know, she's, again, just trying to defend, but falls victim to that natural selection, which I'm getting kind of annoyed that they don't use the actual move names. Oh, Charlotte wins with a cutter. It's like, that's her finisher. It has a name. This is wrestling. What are you doing?
Like, that is such
a main, one of the main reasons for a squash match.
You know, God. Anyway, I just... I got a little bit main roster angry at the utter failure of this commentary team to do anything right. So I gave it a star. Maybe I want to fuck a sexy Smurf. I don't know.
You and me both, bro. So I gave it a star as well. Alexa was, you know, she was all right. Kind of ragdolling around pretty well for Charlotte, who looks amazing and is my queen. I gave it one star.
Very good. Yeah, to your point, Tim, like I was saying, this should be like one of the main focuses of a squash match, just to put over the finisher.
Yeah, so somebody's finished, right?
It's kind of dumb. But anyway, Bayley comes out. She confronts Charlotte for not shaking her hand last week. And Bayley basically says that Charlotte needs to take her seriously, which Charlotte then shows that she does not by pie-facing Bayley and pushing her out the way. Bayley comes back at her with a Bayley to belly and then holds up the title. So, again, we see a little bit more build to this. I thought it was okay. I like Bayley showing some spine, so they're developing this a bit, that Bayley is kind of reached a point where she's not afraid to get physical. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I like the build to this so far. It's been pretty interesting to me.
Kind of weird that Bayley's like coming out there and she's like, I'm seriously taking your title. And then like holds out her hand for a fucking handshake. Like, that's not how that works, boo. That's not what we're doing. I don't know. That was kind of stupid to me. And then it was kind of stupid to me that Charlotte eats a suplex, but whatever.
At least, though, it seemed like kind of a weak Bayley to belt. I can't say that without. Yeah,
stupid.
Yeah. The move was sort of weak, and I was glad that Charlotte didn't really sell it. Like, she sort of just slid out of the ring and it's stood like, there looking, yeah, just looked sort of speechless, which, I don't know. It's a good look on her, I suppose.
Everything's a good look on her.
Yeah, I kind of think so, too.
I just think you have to do something to make Bayley seem like a threat, or else she just, and, you know what I mean? If they're going to have this match, you have to give Bayley a little bit of like to where it seems like she has any chance in hell, you know, that she can hang with Charlotte. So I kind of get why they allowed her to do something to her.
Oh, yeah. I'm fine with it. I thought the move looked, the execution looked a little weird. Yeah,
it's a weird, I'm never a fan of the, I'm more of a fan of the like over the head, belly to belly. I've never been a huge fan of this kind of side one. It never really looks super impressive to me.
Depends on who's doing it. I like Scott Steiner's. I like Ken Shamrock's. Yes. That's about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you really got to throw. But anyway. All right. Tyler Breeze says that they basically says that he should be the champion because none of the other combatants look like him, and he will win because he's better looking, which is some amazing logic. And he says that every time he steps in the ring, he gets it done. So he at least gives one little tidbit at the end that actually has anything to do with wrestling. That's why he's going to win. But I kind of liked how delusional he is and just thinking like he's going to win because he's better looking. I thought that was pretty fun.
It is funny because he does play this very, very, very well because he is seemingly very baffled as to why anybody thinks that anybody but him should win just based on looks. And it's so delusional and crazy, and it just works. It works for him.
In a way, it feels like he's now perhaps reconciled his modeling career with his wrestling career, and is conflating the two, in fact, because success in modeling, which I guess he's doing much less of these days, it is going to be very looks oriented, right? So now he's like, well, I'm this good looking, so that must mean I'm the most successful wrestler on the roster.
I've never thought of it that way, but I actually really like that.
I just now did. It's just bullshit.
That's fantastic. I'm in.
And here's the thing. Like, Tyler, at first, I always thought of as, like, a decent look, an attractive dude playing a character who was meant to be much, much hotter, right?
Yes.
And over the course of doing this show, I'm like, I think he is pretty hot.
He got shoot hot, right?
I don't know how you can be won over to thinking someone's hot when you didn't really. I thought he was fine before, but I'm like, oh damn, I'm kind of.
That's how good he is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I agree. I like that they've gotten into like his the psychology of it in his brain. Like, it's not just a thing where it's like, well, he's a model who wrestles. It's kind of like, no, he really is like so enamored with looks that he thinks that these people shouldn't have the title because they're ugly. Everyone else is ugly. He's beautiful. Like, he comes off as kind of a psychopath in a good way. It's like very interesting.
Like, it took me this long to realize that that's what he was doing. Like, I thought he was just mostly just being a dick, you know, before, about how Neville's an uggo. But, like, honestly, I think that's how he really feels now.
It's really, he has a lot of convictions in that
exactly.
area.
Exactly. It makes sense.
Very important to him that ugly people don't represent.
Don't win. They don't win. Like, why would they ever win? I don't get it.
They should get nothing in life, right?
Exactly. Fucking uggos.
You should be behind the camera, not in front of it.
Yeah,
God.
Fuck you all. What are you doing? Put a mask on like a luchador.
Jesus.
Well, I wonder if he's going to think that international superstar Kenta is an uggo because he's going to be debuting at TakeOver, guys. Just a quick behind-the-scenes look. So I put these notes into my notes app, and so I have a lot of – I type it really fast, and I have a lot of autocorrect errors. And so this says Kenya debuts at TakeOver.
Oh.
My note says. So.
All right.
Luckily, wow. I remembered.
I was going to say, you pulled it out.
It's going to be exciting. This is also a very casual way of announcing someone's debut. It's one of those, I'm trying to remember whether it was like sort of already known at the time, because there's a lot of like Kenta marks who were like, oh, he's going to NXT now, he's going to be showing up in NXT, and people weren't really sure when, or maybe they thought it was going to be at this show, and I don't know, it's almost... The way it's announced almost takes it as a foregone conclusion that you knew this was going to happen, or you know who Kenta even is. So, and that's weird that they, because we'll get a couple of these announcements, but nobody really, like, Regal doesn't talk about it. Nobody's talking about it on commentary. It's just sort of out there.
No vignettes, really.
No vignettes. Like, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we get a Sin Cara and Kalisto interview next. Sin Cara speaks in Spanish, and then Kalisto kind of translates for him. They say they are capable of beating anyone. Ascension are strong, but so are they, and they are determined. I don't know if I'd ever seen Sin Cara speak in English or Spanish up until this promo. Like, I didn't know he spoke. I thought he was kind of like a silent character, and then he spoke, and he had kind of a deep voice. But
I remember he
standard.
Had an interview a couple weeks, well, towards the start of the tournament, because he talked about having to find a partner. That was a real quick interview. So
I thought this was pretty funny.
I did too, actually. It's stupid, but
I mean, yeah, it's sort of like a little funny little bright spot after, I don't know, just sort of this kind of mundane stuff.
Very humorless.
I thought it was really cute, him speaking Spanish, the other one translating, and then the other one finally speaking English, and he's like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty great.
I like that he seemed almost exhausted trying to keep up with Sin Cara, who's like saying, and he's like,
He's okay, like, could you just not like
do so this? What my partner said was, he does it like three times, and then Sin Cara is just like, we'll see you at the takeover or whatever you say.
The takeover. Yeah, they're very likable. And I think even with the silliness, they were able to kind of walk the line where they did seem kind of focused on what they were going after and stuff. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm hoping for big things for them. I hope they're successful because I've liked
them being the Ascension, hopefully.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Fingers crossed, man.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
I'm dying to look it up. But I'm not going to.
I don't remember, to tell you the truth. I do not.
Yeah, I wasn't completely locked in at NXT until a little bit later on, after I kind of caught a little more, got a little more.
Yeah, hot. Well, you know, this is where I remember watching that first takeover because they made such a big deal about it on the network, which was so new at the time. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really cool. And I watched a few subsequent weeks of TV, and then I just sort of fell off because I knew it was always there, right? I was like, well, I can catch up whenever. And, I never did. The next takeover rolled around, and I know I didn't see the second takeover live. I watched it later. I do remember kind of the big matches, but like I have no idea what happens, and I won't spoil it for myself, so even though I've seen it but have forgotten.
It's a hypothetical dedication. Hypothetical dedication we have to the podcast.
Yeah.
So we get the next up, we get the battle of the ties here. We have Ty Dillinger versus Tyler Breeze. So I thought Ty Dillinger looked here. Now, not in the ring, looked like Dean Malenko, but I think like physically, he looked like a tall Dean Malenko.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I don't know. I can see it.
But anyway, he frustrates Breeze when he's like if you just Dean was like the same weight, but you like stretched him out.
Yeah, I can see it.
Like, are you skinnier? There you go. But he frustrates Breeze. I'm sure Tyler Breeze still thinks he's an uggo. But he frustrates Breeze on Atomic Drop. And this is pretty much like Ty kind of getting a decent bit of offense and then just getting beauty shotted out of nowhere for the win. And that was kind of the base of the whole match, which I did like it. It was not much of a match, only went half a star. But I did like that it accomplished – it put over, like, that the beauty shot can be, like, an out-of-nowhere move. Even though we've said before it's not the best-looking move, it's still kind of put into our minds in a fatal four-way situation that it's kind of a quick hit that maybe he could pull it out anywhere, which I appreciated them getting that across.
So I have a feeling that this is going to be a series of squash matches that we're going to see from the Fatal Four contenders. Am I wrong or am I right?
Well, I think you're going to be proven right.
You may be right.
To me, it's like, look, if Jenny Smith and her limited comprehension of whatever the fuck's happening at any given moment can tell you what is going to happen on this show, then you probably should not fucking do that. Because it's boring, and even she figured it out. It's not good. Half a star.
Wow. I actually gave it a full star. I guess maybe this is a thirst premium that you could charge me, which I know, Jake, you've done a few times. Fine, I'll take the hit on that one. But I just thought it was like no better, but also no worse than that Charlotte Alexa match. So I'm like, I don't know. It seems like a star. It's fine. They're hot. Who cares?
Well.
Sexy Smurf, sexy Dean Malenko. What's the difference? You're gonna want to fuck them both.
Tall Dean Malenko.
That could be a Nitty line too. Sexy Smurf, sexy Dean Malenko. I'm gonna fuck them both. Come on.
All right. Well, next up we'll have Tyson Kidd. He's giving a promo about the Fatal 4-Way match, and he basically goes to this whole thing where it appears to be that he's talking about all the other guys, saying that people don't think he can win because how can he compete with someone who learned to do high flying in the UK, who went to Japan and learned to wrestle in Japan, and basically seemingly putting over all the other guys in the match, but really, surprise, surprise, he's talking about himself, that he is, in fact, these actually all apply to him, and that's what he's going to, that's why he's going to win a takeover, which I thought this was at least interesting compared to the, like, at least there was something going on here, not just the generic, like, stuff he always says. At least it had some kind of thread to it that you could follow, even if what you kind of knew where he was going with it. I thought it was at least interesting. By his standards, it was better than normal, I guess.
I would agree with that. Better than normal for him, but still not not anything I want to watch.
The layout of this promo is pretty good. His execution is still very Tyson. He is still who he is, so you're like, a better guy could super get this over, but that's not who he is. But yeah, points for originality.
Yes. All right, moving on, we now head to we have a tape of Enzo and Cass at their barbershop. They're making your mama jokes as they walk in. I did not get any of them down. I don't know if anyone caught your attention, but we are then introduced to their lady friend, I guess, hairstylist Carmella. So it'll be the debut of Carmella outside of being a rosebud. We've seen her as a rosebud, but never as our own.
And she is at a salon called Hair.
Hair.
Or how do they say it in their Jersey accent?
Is Hair. Like,
Hair. Hair. I can't even do it.
Yeah.
Got nothing on that one.
Which we should say.
Weird hair.
Carmella's extremely New Jersey here. Like, they really play up, like, the Jersey thing. They zoom in on her boobs, which she tells them to stop being, I think she has said, like, what are you, six or something like that? Like, gets pissed off that they're zooming in on her boobs. And then, like, Cass keeps on, like, looking in the mirror and flexing to the camera. It was very, very strange. But basically, the whole point of this is that they get this, like, actual bucket, like a tin bucket of hair removal cream from Carmella. Like, the whole thing is like, no, you got the stuff, Carmella? You got the stuff, Mella? And she's like, yeah, I got it. And then she gets it, and it's like this big old, this big bucket of hair removal cream.
It's a big old cum bucket is what it is?
Whatever it is, they spilled on the dog. So
yes, we get some casual animal abuse in here.
Yes, they spill it on Carmella's. I guess this is like a poodle, I guess, would be the dog.
It was somebody's client's dog that they brought in, right?
Yes, Fifi.
Was that, I'm sorry. This was all very hard. It wasn't hard to follow. It's
just simple yet very complex.
Yes, thank you. The rules are. The footage is simple, but actually quite complex. This is going to come off so badly if I'm wrong. And I'm.
Also, why are they fucking with the hair removal cream?
I have to ask this. I'm sorry. Was the client in the who brought in the dog Angela Dawkins?
Oh, I don't know.
I did not.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I don't know. Because they, I don't know
if I caught him with. Cass was too busy, like, feeling himself in the mirror to really get any glimpses of anything else.
I don't have a good enough feel for what Angelo Dawkins looks like.
I don't think that was character him.
Is to know.
Yeah, but the camera was kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
So they spill it on Fifi, and they're excited to find out that it works, because once they spill it on Fifi, they pull a big chunk of hair out of poor Fifi. And Carmella is obviously pissed off and kicks them out or whatever after this. But yeah, so now they have their hair removal cream that apparently they want to use on the Legionnaires at TakeOver.
But why would you want to use hair removal cream when you could, like, shave it or cut it or rip it or any other wrestling thing it off? Like, I just think the cream is dumb.
I guess they just want a really clean hair removal experience.
Yeah, they want it to be hairless, not just shaved.
Mm-hmm.
Completely
right,
hairless.
Right, they want it to look good when they do it, I guess. I got nothing. Like, right. Is it the point to, like,
right. Make it look like to really make it humiliating. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But I mean, it does look like a giant bucket of cum, so I can see how maybe they incorporated that into the humiliation of it.
Well, I did enjoy the Italian colors on the bucket.
Me too. Yes.
Painted up like the Italian flag.
Or was it French? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's Italian for the sake of Enzo and Cass here.
Mm, okay.
And so that Carmella would know who it's meant for.
She has some various buckets for people of different nationalities.
Yeah.
Cum buckets.
Yeah.
I bet she does.
Okay, that one over there is for Enzo and Cass. Don't touch it until they get here.
But we are going to see, I think one reason they got it, we're going to see in a minute that maybe they're not going to want to wait until they want something that's going to be fast acting, where you could possibly even remove the hair without having to have your opponent be unconscious, maybe. Could be part of the motivation.
Mm. Okay, we'll see.
We'll see. All right, I'm so Jenny, it looks like, oh, poor Fifi, yeah.
Yeah, well, she looked rather meticulously groomed by the end of the segment, so, wow, that stuff really does work wonders.
All right, well, continue on to, we're beginning to prove Jenny's prediction of how these matches go. We now get Adam Rose versus Tyson Kidd. Coming into this, I was kind of thinking Adam Rose seems a bit stuck in neutral. Like, he doesn't really have anything going on. For somebody that they push so heavily, he's kind of just there right now. Not really doing much.
Yeah.
Partying.
Maybe that's the risk of this type of character. It's sort of, in a way, he feels like unpushable because, I mean, what do you? You're not going to put him in the world title picture. They don't have any secondary belts.
Yeah, and that's a problem right now.
Do you want to see him in like an extended feud with somebody? Not really.
And then
like,
all of his feuds are going to end up being about some goofy shit like what was it, Captain Comic and all that?
A lollipop.
Yeah, it's kind of like you can't really do like a serious feud with him because I don't know how it would really work.
He's just like a support player to more important things, it feels like.
Attraction.
I mean, kind of okay. Yeah, an attraction. And I'm kind of maybe all right with that.
I'm all right with it just based on like they legit have like an issue like previously. So it's not just like a dumbass out of contact squash match, so that's fine with me.
Yeah, so Adam Rose, he starts off hammering with his party-based offense, and then Tyson kind of pivots into his normal repertoire of moves, which are fine, but not always the most exciting. Rose, they use some forearms and elbows to kind of break free from Tyson's momentum. He hits a nice spine buster, which is always pretty good from Adam Rose. It's one of his signature moves. But then as he's coming back, I think he's going maybe for his choo-choo train move or something. Sorry, just saying that sounds absurd. But Tyson drop kicks him in the knee and kind of takes him out and then locks in the sharpshooter, which he does have a pretty good sharpshooter, which the more wrestling I watch of different promotions and stuff, I realize like, that is not a move that many people can pull off well. It just seems to be something that a lot of people fuck up.
There's like three wrestlers that can do it. Yeah.
But Tyson's is pretty good. He wins with that. So solid match. So not quite a squash, but really the whole point was to put Tyson over, but allow it to be a little more competitive because Adam Rose is kind of a featured guy, like we were just saying. So I went 2-1. It was just kind of a solid. I went the gentleman's 2, if you will.
I did the same thing. For the same reasons. I thought it was better than the earlier squash matches we got. Much to my chagrin, upvoting a Tyson match by this much, I thought it was pretty solid. Like it, what can I say? It felt like a real match.
It did feel like a real match. And that's because Adam Rose was in it. And I feel like we've seen him put on, I've enjoyed his matches, I think, maybe a little bit more than you guys lately, but what's your rating on that sharpshooter, Tim?
I'd probably give that sharpshooter an 8 out of 10.
That's exactly what I gave it.
Yeah.
I like this match. It was pretty good. I kind of figured out, like I said, what we were doing, so I knew what was going to happen, but I gave it a star and a half.
Not bad.
Tim, what do you think? What do you think Brett would give it?
Oh, well, you know, I not too many people in the business can execute an excellent sharpshooter. I mean, myself, my lovable brother Owen, and that's really about where it begins and ends. Anyone else is, I mean, mainly just an imitator. You know, Tyson Kidd's all right. He's trained in the dungeon, but he's not of the same generation as we are. And hopefully he won't be winning that title at the Fatal 4-Way takeover. I don't think he's deserving of it, especially with his marital problems of late. I mean, that bitch Natty's been putting him through the ringer.
That bitch Natty.
I like that Brett.
Not around for this match.
Mm.
I like that Brett can only put over like blood family. Like if you married in, not good enough.
Yeah.
You're not getting Brett's respect. All right. Sami Zayn.
He won't speak ill of the dad either. I mean, if Owen was still alive, he'd get buried. But, you know, it's his dead brother.
So in Jenny for heaven's sake. Tyson Kidd.
Yeah. Well.
Very good. All right. Sami Zayn explains the advantages of being a challenger in his normal kind of nervous, not really nervous, but kind of jittery, I would say, like delivery in a lot of his promos when he's really hyped up. But he says that if he has the choice, he really wants to pin Neville because that would truly prove that he is the best in NXT. So, standard pretty good Sami promo.
Not bad.
All right. We then head to the Vaudevillains, and we have Aiden and Simon Gotch. Aiden says that they are cut above the rest of NXT because they have the perfect combination. He is sophisticated, and Gotch is the most powerful man in all of NXT, and he can lift mountains. And he asks if Simon Gotch has anything to say, and all Simon Gotch says is, Excelsior! And then they go about their business. I thought it was a good promo. I thought Aiden was really good.
Yeah, not bad like for his, them.
Yeah, he's got good
delivery. The Excelsior is kind of taken already. We cross industries here, but I don't know. I comics dork that I am rub me the wrong way.
Negative stars.
Promo.
Yeah, I was here nor there on the Gotch thing, but I liked Aiden's whole spiel about why they're a great team and all that.
Yes.
All right. Continuing with the squashes or matches to build up the Fatal 4-Way competitors, we now are going to get a very odd matchup of Sami Zayn versus Marcus Louis.
Lord.
So apparently not worried about letting Marcus Louis get a tune-up before his big match because
this shows how like fucking out of the way Sami is too. Like who the fuck are we going to give to Sami to squash this one?
I do think it could be like a credit to him because they're like, oh, we could send Sami out there with fucking Marcus Louis, impoverished Randy Orton. Like,
good Lord.
Physically. He kind of has a Randy Orton kind of build, I guess. He's tall.
Delicious. He's tall. That's about it.
So Marcus Louis locks in a wrist lock, which Sami twists out of. Marcus Louis has some okay at best power offense. He slaps on a headlock and really goes into full on stall mode. But then Sami comes in, he has a nice comeback, and I like that he won with the Koji clutch, which is a nice little I always like when he pulls that out. So I want a star and a quarter, probably the quarters for the Koji clutch because I like that move.
I can't believe of these non-competitive enhancement Elevation Fatal 4-Way matches that Sammy's is the one I've rated the lowest at 3/4 of a star. I this chin lock that went on for an eternity, I think it actually put me into a coma vicariously. And I awoke from that coma and it was still going on, and then I rewatched the entirety of Triple H versus Booker T from WrestleMania 19, and the chin lock was still on. And then I watched it again in slow motion And then I shot myself in the head and turned the show off.
And then you gave it one star.
I didn't even give it one star. No. Gave it just shy of one star.
All right. Well, I gave it half a star. And I'm still alive, so. The pairing was absurd to me. Sammy deserves better. I guess it's fine for what we're doing on this episode.
He couldn't even get like the A Legionnaire. He had to get like the.
I know. Like, why we're not fucking with Sylvester? Like, his app is like, insane right now.
Fucking with Sylvester.
I love that quote out of context. Probably not fucking with Sylvester.
It just seems.
Or even somebody like, I don't know, like an Xavier Woods, who he could just have a good sort of showcase match with.
Or bring in somebody from the main roster, like they always do on NXT.
Sheamus. Do another Sheamus match.
Give somebody, you know.
Sheamus. Cesaro. For Sheamus,
honestly. He just squashed with Sheamus.
Sheamus in 2014. But no, like Cesaro, who gives a fuck, right?
I mean, one of your lower level guys ain't doing shit. I'm sure there's plenty. The main roster doing nothing right now, but.
Jason Jordan would have been better.
There you go. At least we know him. That's what I was thinking. Like maybe they set these up with competitors that we know. You know, like the Adam Rose, this guy. Like maybe that was the thought process behind it.
Yeah, people we would see at the
right. The crowd hates all this. I mean, like they suck, but like I get it. Like I would probably be with
right in there with them.
And I think this is moments where they're still one of their main focuses is like being a developmental. Because I feel like maybe the motivation behind this is like, you know, Marcus Louis, you go in there with Sammy and see what you can do. Because obviously he can go. Can you maybe keep up with him? Like that sort of thing. And that's, I think eventually would not really be their focus. And their focus is going to turn at some point to just how can we make like the best wrestling show with the talent we have? Where here, I think you still get these moments where it's like you get these weird ass matchups because they want to, I guess, kind of test people. I don't know.
That makes sense. But I can see it.
But it does, but it also doesn't make for the best television program all the time.
Right.
Anyway. All right. So we're back to the bucket. Speaking of Sylvester the Four, Enzo and Cash jump him from behind and they try to dunk his head in the. Bucket of hair removal cream that they got from Carmella, but he's able to escape by wiggling out of his shirt. So presumably they were going to dunk his entire head. So I'd hate to see, based on what it did to Fifi, what it would have done not only to his hair, but also to like his eyes and
oh god,
his beard.
Yeah, like all that. I mean,
he'd come out of it looking like Robert Gibson. I apologize for that remark. This is what happens when you've watched a headlock for 20 hours.
Looking like a hairless Seth Rogen.
I'll be doing more editing Peacock on this one.
Yep.
Peacock will just not kidding. Run this podcast.
All right, well now, before the match, we actually get Neville addressing the disadvantage of a fatal four-way, which, duh, Neville. We kind of all know that. Like, yeah, you can lose by like not even doing that poorly. They could just pin somebody else.
Remember that time you got pinned by Tyson Kidd? That sucked, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. But anyway, he's going to have the last of our tune-up matches for the Fatal Four Way, as he's going to be facing everyone's least favorite environmentalist, CJ Parker, as he comes with his. There's no Planet B signs. Renee says, look at this. Okay, how much of an asshole is CJ Parker? Renee caught him fueling up at Sheetz with regular fuel.
What?
Do you believe that?
Regular unleaded.
God, what a hypocrite.
Piece of shit.
Renee just following him around, seeing what kind of gas he puts in his car.
I bet he ordered a lot of made-to-order food with a high carbon footprint in that sheets, too.
Probably did.
God, terrible.
Fucking asshole.
Anyway, I want to start and a half on this one because Neville in these matches is just always kind of brings it. And any kind of match where he's getting showcased, like, all the stuff just looks so good. He looks like a complete stud. He wins with the Red Arrow. He looks like a fucking beast as usual. So I actually ticked it up to a star and a half.
You know what? I also gave it a star and a half. And say what you will about CJ Parker, but certainly we have. I mean, that fucking asshole environmentalist that he is. I made the observation here that he is very good at just playing this human target for all of Neville's high spots. Like, he's never out of position. He makes it look very natural. Gets a couple of good shots in. Does have some actual offense to make it feel like, again, a TM real match. But yeah, I thought he played his part very well here and didn't look particularly like a struggling developmental guy in the way that like a Marcus Louis did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, these are the sort of matches that I would want to see in some sort of build-up. You know, like, this was actually probably the one that they got the most right to me of the four.
Yeah.
And I think that's a credit to Neville. I mean, he's amazing. And like you said, CJ Parker just, you know, not hanging with him, but being where he needs to be and doing what he's supposed to do in this. Yep. And doing it really well. I really liked his Fossil Fools poster.
Yes.
Was that a new one? I feel like we have not seen Fossil Fools.
I don't think we've seen that one. Yeah.
That was
yeah.
pretty clever. I actually really enjoyed that one. I gave it a star and a half as well.
Look at us.
I will say, and we've talked about it, I don't mind the whole concept of giving each guy like a little tune-up match. Mm-hmm. But like Jenny said, I think the opponents, like the Sammy opponent could have been picked. So basically, the opponents could have been better. They were a little of a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. But I like the concept of getting each guy like you know, like a quick little match to kind of get their shit in and show that they're like why they're meant to be in this match and stuff. I didn't mind that as a concept.
I put like it over the like their signature shit, you know, like so mm-hmm. you know what to kind of expect from a typical match with mm-hmm. with these each of these mm-hmm. four guys.
Yep.
Sorry, Jimmy. Right. Sorry to say.
No, I was just agreeing that I like the concept. I just kind of wish they had put like some sort of little other something on it, like either like you said, like better competitors, or maybe just hiding the concept a little bit better than like straight up mm-hmm. you know you can see what they're doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we will go to our main event, which is going to be the final of the tag term, which has kind of been, as much as it was hyped on our last show, it's kind of been, they haven't really talked about it a whole lot.
I know shit, maybe
yeah.
Yeah, they haven't really talked about it considering this is the final. But anyway, the Vaudevillains versus Sin Cara and Kalisto. All right, so we start off. The heels struggle to counter the fast luchas in their offense, but they finally are able to get an advantage. They work over Sin Cara until Aiden inadvertently rams the post, which allows the luchadores to get some momentum. Sin Cara hits a crossbody. Kalisto then flies in. He hits like a it almost like botched a little bit, but I think it worked out because it looked pretty good because he kind of played it off like he was it's like he did a Hurricane Rana and like went to and it just kind of slammed Gotch's head into the mat almost like Gotch didn't kind of elevate for it, but they played it off well where it was almost like he was just trying to slam him into the mat. So
that was an actual move he would do.
Yeah
but people would take it differently than Gotch kind of did in this match.
Yeah, it was kind of this weird moment where you weren't sure if, like, Gotch didn't do it correctly or, like, were they really going for that or what. But anyway, they played off well. Sin Cara then neutralizes Aiden. Kalisto manages to come in and hit a Selena Del Sol. Kalisto then dives over and hits Aiden onto the ramp. And Sin Cara hits the senton on Gotch to get the win and send them to take over as the number one contenders. It was a quick, fun match. Sin Cara and Kalisto are real fun. I really like their finishing sequence where they kind of do the Selena del Sol and then the senton. It always comes off really smooth, and it works for like a tag match too, because I like the way that the like Kalisto always knows he has to kind of take the other guy out to neutralize him to make sure they can't break up the pin, which is cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they work well as a tag team. I'm glad that they're the number one contenders, and it was a fun little main event. So I went 2.5 on it.
Once again, Kalisto and Sin Cara showing probably some of the most, you know, excitement of the night, really. And even for them, it was subdued. Like, in the beginning part, there wasn't a lot of cool lucha stuff. Like, it was mostly kind of standard. And then towards the end, they sort of turned up on the lucha stuff and got a little bit more exciting, a little bit fire. But, like, for the most part, this just felt standard and cookie cutter, and this is the winner of the tournament, and nobody sold any of that. You know, it's just like,
yeah.
I mean, they put the graphic up there, but like, I don't know. It just feels so one dimensional right now, and I don't know. It's sort of missing something for me. Yeah, two stars, but like, I don't know. I feel like they missed out on this. Like, this could have been something really good, Tim.
Yeah, I'm with you. I went a little higher on the rating. I was with Jake in the 2.5, but I sort of want to, after listening to you, I kind of want to knock it down to 2.25 maybe. And I think I'm going to do that, because it should have been a bigger deal. And the way that they're just like, and that's that. We've got our number one contender after this. Granted, it wasn't the greatest tournament in the world, but if you finish strong, you can sort of salvage that, because people aren't going to remember like the crap in the middle so much.
Exactly. They could have redeemed the entire tournament, you know, in this match, but I just feel like it fell short.
Yeah. It's just like a sub 10-minute match. Mm-hmm. They go out there and do some shit, and you just want better from, I mean, these are your two other named teams other than the Ascension in NXT right now. That's it. And we don't really have anyone else. We have guys who have teamed up, but these are the only real teams. And this, it's sort of like, really, this is all you're going to give us? You know, good finishing stretch. Sure. The hang time on that senton that Sin Cara does is pretty insane. But like, you just wanted something stronger for that to follow from. And I was just kind of like, a little of this, a little of that, and just a little match. Yeah, not the most encouraging for the direction of this tag team division.
If the Ascension wins at TakeOver, I'm quitting the podcast.
But I agree. It had, as much as I did enjoy the match, I thought it was a solid little match. If considering its placement and what it was, I think they definitely could have given him a lot more time and let him go out there and really have like a banger. And, you know, there was no gravity to it, to you guys' point. Like, they didn't, like, it should have been built up the whole show. Like, holy shit, this is for the number one contender at TakeOver. Like, you have to stay and watch this or whatever. And it just is kind of treated like another match. And I think the benefit of doing it that way too is that I don't think the Vaudevillains look bad in this match or like left any worse off. But I think if you do give them more time and let them go out and try and have like a really great match, it could help the Vaudevillains get over more even in losing. Where here they just kind of were like, oh, well, we lost. No big deal. But
which was sort of the point of the whole tournament, was it not? To like... Yep. Stove up this whole fucking crazy ass division that is doing nothing, and I don't even feel like they've succeeded in that, honestly. I mean, like, Enzo and Cass are doing like comedy bits over here, you know, and what else are we doing?
Yeah, they're like not even wrestling as a tag team, really. Like, it's
right, yeah. I mean, like, we might be worse off than we were before the tourney.
Yeah, because if I were to ask you who should have been number one contender, like if they didn't have the tournament, you probably would have said Sin Cara and Kalisto anyway.
100% I would. I knew they were going to win this. I mean,
And they did win. So the to your point, the point would be to get everyone else over, which they did not really
exactly
do a great job of, unfortunately. But that, and also it's kind of weird because this is our last, I mean, I guess we're skipping the recap show, but as far as like actual episodes of TV, that's kind of how we end going into TakeOver. So no like real big final moment as far as like the main event, besides having all the squash matches, we don't get one final thing of to push the main event or anything like that. So kind of a tepid way to end the go home episode really.
Well, the Ascension comes out and then.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear them talk. Like, what?
Like, nigh, here, lay, shut.
Okay. I felt bad. Like, I don't know. I don't know any of the outcomes at TakeOver, but I feel like I do know the outcomes at TakeOver. Mm-hmm. Like, if I think about it. But. I don't know. This whole thing has just been so weird.
Yeah. I can't say it's been the best build to a big show, for sure.
Well, and we also can't say they haven't had time. We've had many weeks to get here.
We've been doing this for a long while.
There's been a big gap since that. I mean, the first TakeOver was way back.
May, what? I think, right?
Yeah. So you're just like, damn, it's been a long stretch here where it seems like there should have been another TakeOver between the two, but it's still so early that you don't know exactly what the placement of these TakeOvers is going to be. But I mean, this is, like you said, this is the go home show. This is your last chance to make a strong impression before the pay-per-view, which it's not a pay-per-view. And maybe you factor that into, I don't know, the presentation here, because it's like they don't have to sell it, so to speak. Like, it's just, you know, you've got the network. You're either going to watch it or you don't.
Right. They don't have to sell it, but they have to get people to watch it. I mean, so that's the same thing, I guess.
It's just such a different model that maybe that's why the urgency isn't there, but just as a viewer, just consuming this episode of television, you're like, I want to see some more energy to this. I want to see some more urgency going into a big event. Like, yes, I'm going to watch it. Yes, I know that there's going to be some matches, but like, could you be any more subdued in your enthusiasm for it?
And it's like, we know it's going to happen. Uh-huh. It's just a matter of when do they kind of flip the switch and start and get there. Because, you know, which is a mystery right now. Are we all kind of in agreement that this second episode was a step down from the last one? I know I was.
I think so.
Yeah, I went 4 out of 10 on it.
I feel like I had better match ratings on the second one. Like, just by a little bit, maybe. Because I just had like a dud and like a one and the other, but like this was more matches, but I don't guess they were much better. I'm gonna do like the same, 4 out of 10.
Yeah, I think I downgrade it because we had more matches overall. Like, average match quality is probably better, but you don't have that one standout match. And again, I just knock it because this is the go home show and it should be better, and it's not. So sorry, points off.
All right. So kind of a ho-hum build, last little push to our TakeOver, but we'll go into our awards. Best match, I have the main event tag from the first episode with the title contenders with Sammy Neville, Tyson Breeze.
Yeah, that's what I had as well.
Yep. Likewise.
All right. Worst match, I had the Ascension versus the Locals.
Yep.
Rising, I have Kalisto and Sin Cara, and I also put Bayley on there. Anybody else for Rising?
Maybe Bull. Bull Dempsey.
All right. I would put Bull in there.
He's been hitting those Carmella? Weights so hard.
Carmella.
Carmella's appearing.
Yeah.
Rising.
She appears. Angela Dawkins, right. Probably not.
No.
All right. Fallen.
Everyone else?
I have Sasha for sure.
Marcus Louis.
Marcus Louis. All
right.
Tyson Kidd.
Ascension.
Yes.
They've been falling since we started the show. Yes. All right. Yeah, a lot of people falling, unfortunately. Hopefully they come back up. MVP, I had Neville.
I think I'm going to go with Neville as well.
Yeah, I see no reason not to.
Very good. LVP, I had Marcus Louis here for the headlock.
Tyson Kidd.
Yeah, I guess Marcus again. No other match made me actually suicidal. So, yeah.
LVP,
yeah.
Whoever took Leprechaun off of Peacock. Oh, whoever programmers made that bullshit decision.
Shit.
Best moment, I went with the Bailey and Charlotte interaction, probably from the first episode because I thought that one was more interesting, but kind of their. I guess their whole interaction was the most interesting kind of out of the ring thing for me. NA.
So hard.
Incomplete.
You know, I'm going to go with the Sin Cara Kalisto English Spanish translation promo.
Oh, that's a good pick. I like that. I'm going to go with the reveal of Enzo and Cass at Hair.
These are some pretty damning best moments going into our first big show.
Yeah, like I'm sorry. I'm going to give it to Tyler in his promo about why he should be the champion. Because
he's better looking.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's, all right, guys. Well, we're done. We're almost at TakeOver. Next episode, we'll cover TakeOver. How do we feel?
I'm not gonna lie.
apprehensive.
A little bit. But I do know that, you know, one wrestling show does not have any bearing on the next wrestling show. So, I mean, honestly, like, they could have this shit and then come back and have a great show. On TakeOver, so that's what I'm hoping for. The talent is there. I'm not going to say that all the stories and shit are there, but there's a lot of stuff in the mix that could have the potential for a good show, and I just hope they can do that.
Well, as little as they've done to stoke my interest in this TakeOver, it's hard to not get excited for an NXT TakeOver. Just on the basis of takeovers are pretty good. We should be in for some decent wrestling. I am looking forward to it.
Agree. All right, you sexy Smurfs. What do you have to plug?
Well, I have a podcast feed. It's called The Jenny Position. Right now, you can find a new episode of You Heard About Pluto. Me and my friend, Tim, not the tool man, Taylor, watched an episode of Dog the Bounty Hunter. That was my first and only episode that I've ever seen of that show.
Is it really?
Yes.
Wow.
So that was interesting, and we ended up creating an original character and everything. So that was a fun one. Listen to that one. On right here on the Wrestling Network, you can find a new episode of Jenny and the Gems. It is a grab bag episode. So we did match picks for each of us, and that was really fun. Drew tells a hilarious and insane story that everybody should hear on that show. And there is also a new episode of TNA Never Dies on the North South Connection podcast feed. So my show there with JT and Aaron is insane because TNA. And then I have a show with JT and John D'Amato called The Extreme Three-Way Dance, going through ECW, which is awesome. So listen to that one too. And follow me on Twitter at Jenny Position.
All right. Very good. So here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, Jenny, you and I do a show called Talking WCW with Greg Phillips. Had the most recent episode of that drop. And our subject on that edition was Raven. Mm-hmm. I think we killed it, to be quite honestly. Pat ourselves on the back there. We picked three really awesome matches. We were 3 for 3, I thought, on our match picks. So that was a really, really fun one to record. And hopefully that came across to listeners, hypothetical and otherwise, on that episode of Talking WCW. And boy, howdy, reluctant as I may be to publicize the existence of this podcast, we have done a WrestleMania summit here on Place to Be Nation Wrestling, where we are comparing head-to-head WrestleManias 17 and 19 in order to determine once and for all, historically, officially, the best WrestleMania of all time. Now, you may be wondering, why aren't other WrestleManias in contention? Well, it's because these are the two that get talked about the most these days. So we kind of just decided it's down to those two. If you disagree, disagree. But we kind of cut out other shows for consideration and said it comes down to just the two that people talk about when they have these conversations. And we have had within our group this conversation many, many, many times over. So we finally decided to put it to rest. Did a live watch of WrestleMania 17 in all its glory. So that's about a 4-hour show, okay? Which produces at least a 4-hour podcast, plus some jibber-jab at the beginning and the end. So it's a lengthy listen. Maybe plan that out in parts. If you're going to be doing any traveling, if you got a long work day, I don't know. I can't tell you how to listen to the show. But if you made it through Zack Snyder's Justice League, this is only a little bit longer. So check out.
And just as good, honestly.
Certainly just as good. So check out part one of the WrestleMania Summit, WrestleMania 17. With myself, with Ben Locke, with Sean Kidd, Logan Crosland, Callum McDougal, who am I forgetting? Matt Souza. Is that everyone? God, I hope so.
They're actually both out.
Yes. So we also have a part two of this, which was the live watch of WrestleMania 19 with all those same fellows I named and you, Jenny, joining us for this adventure. Here again, WrestleMania 19 is about a 4-hour show. It's another long podcast. So combined here total, we've got 2 4-hour podcasts, about 4.5-hour podcasts. So you've got 9 hours of, look, free listening pleasure. Are you really going to complain? Come on. But
don't be an asshole. Don't complain.
Yeah, but I will just say that these shows got a little blue, if you can believe it. You know what you're getting with a Place to Be Nation Wrestling live watch by now, probably, if not, tends
people
to be a little bit
today.
A little bit on the raunchier side. But I think buried within that, we did have some pretty solid sound analysis. And all that is to say, there will also be a part three, which is just going to be a wrap-up of the whole deal. We've watched them both. Now we're actually going to compare and talk some categories, just to kind of put the nail in the coffin there. But big, big project that I really enjoyed doing. And again, just hope that the listeners can get some entertainment if not educational value out of it. I don't know.
Remains. And also forgive us for anything wrong that we said.
Forgive us for any wrongs, yes. Any sins that were committed on said podcast.
All said with love.
Oh, always. And you can follow me on Twitter. I am at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-68 on Twitter, where I share my senior yearbook quotes. Yes, quotes, plural. Had several.
Bunch.
Many.
Yeah. Many. As we all do. That's something fun for everyone on this show. Okay.
If after you listen to Talking WCW, you want to see what Raven was up to in 2004, you can check me out on Highway to the Impact Zone. We just covered Turning Point 2004, and a spoiler, he's wearing a weird metal helmet thing and having a Serengeti survival match. So check it out. Other than that, you can find me on the North South Connection feed where I do the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast, where I have a different guest or a rotating guest all the time. And we're going through the Ruthlessly Aggressive era. And I think by the time this comes out, if not very soon after, I'll have an episode out on SummerSlam 2002, which is kind of up there as far as like talked about shows, maybe not on the same level as the two WrestleManias Tim was just talking about, but it's definitely held in very high esteem as one of the greatest shows ever. So I'm really excited to cover it. And that's pretty much all I got for now. I want to thank all of our hypothetical listeners for listening as always. Thank my co-host as we have to wade through the waters of trying to figure out how to still watch the stuff to do the podcast right now, and what kind of technical tricks we have to pull that can sometimes be frustrating. But I'm glad we're able to pull it off.
Me too.
Yeah. We will continue to try to pull it off.
Yeah. So hopefully, if all goes well, we'll be back in about a month to cover this next takeover, which we're building to for what seems like an eternity. So I'm excited to do it. But that's all we have for PTB NXT. So all my sexy Smurfs out there, y'all take care. Bye-bye. Peace.
PTB NXT has left the building.
Shake my hand. Reach over and shake somebody's hand.